This is Intersection. I'm Matthew Petty. Municipal elections are being held next week, with Orlando City Commission races on the ballot in three districts, while mayoral elections are being held in several cities around Central Florida. Issues driving voters to the polls include growth and development, housing and jobs. Joining me for a closer look at those races and some of the headlines in state politics, Chris Carmody, shareholder with Gray Robinson and Republican political analyst, and Dick Batchelor, former state lawmaker, Democratic political analyst and founder of the Dick Batchelor Management Group. Dick, thanks for being here.
Thank you very much. Good to be back.
And Chris Carmody. Chris, welcome back.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Well, let's start with some municipal elections. In Orlando, there are three city commission races being contested. District 1 incumbent Jim Gray is facing challengers Sunshine Grund and Bill Moore. In District 3, incumbent Robert Stewart faces Nicolette Springer and Samuel Chambers. And in District 5, incumbent Regina Hill is being challenged by Shaniqua Rose. And some of the issues are the same across all the races: affordable housing, mass transit, jobs, to name a few. Let's start with District 1. Dick, what can you tell us about the incumbent and his challenges in this race?
There's always the advantage of the incumbency, particularly in local races where you're out there, you're meeting people while you're in office, while you're serving the several years you served in the interim. You get become very familiar with the issues. You get to host community meetings pre-pandemic and meet people. So the incumbent always has the leg up, so to speak. And the two candidates running against Mr. Gray are pretty weak. I don't mean that in the pejorative sense, but they don't have any political strength. They're not raising any money. So I think Mr. Gray is going to be fine in this election.
Chris, what are your thoughts? I think, you know, the name Sunshine Grund is familiar for folks who have been following local politics. I believe she ran for mayor a few years ago now.
Yeah, the name is familiar, but I think to Dick's point, incumbency has its advantage. Folks who've turned out before have voted for Commissioner Gray. And to my knowledge, he hasn't given him a reason to change that vote. And once people vote for someone once, it's sort of buying stock, and you're going to stick with that stock no matter what, even if it dips a little bit. And I have not heard of any reason why the stock in Jim Gray, anyone would want to sell that back and go with someone else. So those folks are probably there with him. He's probably collecting more. And I think more importantly, when you look at District 1 in Orlando, Orlando's had growth all across the city. Mm-hmm. But probably the least amount of growth in comparison to some of the other districts we're going to talk about is in that area. It's over in the Lake Nona area. While it's grown, it's been pretty stable in growth. When we talk about District 3 and 5, especially District 3, mm-hmm. a lot of growth has been in that area with new voters, new residents that have changed. But, you know, Commissioner Gray, most of the folks are voted for him last time. Not a large influx of new voters into his area compared to some of the others.
Well, let's talk about District 3. Chris Carmody, you brought this up, and, you know, development, obviously that's been something that the incumbent and the challengers particularly have been campaigning on. Just talk about what stands out for you about this race.
I think in District 3, where you have the incumbent, Commissioner Robert Stewart, and probably the main challenger, Nicolette Springer, there's three candidates, but I would say it's Nicolette and Commissioner Stewart. It's where it's going to come down to. Does the incumbency that Dick talked about hold true when so much of that district is either new or added into? And when for folks listening, that's Baldwin Park, Delaney Park area, and College Park area. Mm-hmm. And all three of those major neighborhoods have had major change in growth, people moving in and out and adding in. As a Baldwin Park resident myself, I see the growth in that area. And so you have to almost like reach out to new people, a whole lot more new people than you were expecting before. So even though all the folks that voted for you previously and the time before that and before that, they're probably going to stick with you regardless of how they feel about some of the development or transportation or anything else. But it's that 20% of new folks in the district, which could be the difference, where are they going to land? And mm-hmm. and I think that some of that is very much up in air right now, is whether this race is going to be done in a week or if it's going to be done in a runoff with three candidates. And I think you're seeing that with this competitive race.
Dick Batchelor, you talked about the door-to-door campaign. I believe you were referring to this particular
yes.
race.
Yeah.
Just tell me what's been happening there, the work that's been put in, and maybe how that may pay out.
Yeah, first of all,
First of all,
a point of disclosure, I went to Sunday school in the 1950s with Jacob Stewart, Robert's brother. I served in the state legislature with Senator Stewart, his mm-hmm. other brother. So I guess I'm biased to that degree, having known them a long time. His brother Jacob worked for Governor Martinez. He worked for Governor Bill Frederick's chief of staff. I mean, there's a whole history there. But to the point, though, on Nicolette Springer, she ran for the county commission. Mm-hmm. She's very smart. She's very astute politically. She's working hard. I was very surprised in a city commission race that Congresswoman Stephanie Murphy endorsed her. Anna Eskamani, state representative, endorsed her. I don't think I've seen a race where you've got members of Congress and state legislators getting involved in a city election, but Nicolette Springer is kind of in that club, so to speak. So she's getting a lot of support. She's raising money. She won't outraise the incumbent because of the value of the incumbency again. Mm-hmm. But she's doing a lot of door-to-door, a lot of sign-waving, post-pandemic now getting out and even shaking some hands. So she is a tough candidate for Robert Stewart. He recognizes that, of course, and he will probably outraise her 2-1. Again, the value of the incumbency and the fact that he's actually been there doing a good job, according to his supporters. But that race is going to be – there's another race we're going to talk about, too, that's going to be contested pretty strongly. But in that race, Nicolette Springer, if you had to choose a candidate to run against an incumbent of – how many years now, 12-plus years, you would find a young, aggressive, bright female, and then, again, have her endorsed by these – members of Congress and state legislators. I've not seen that in a local race. So she is a very strong candidate. That's going to be an interesting race. And to get out the vote is going to be the most important thing other than the money. Hmm. And the question is, does Robert Stewart have the turnout machine that Nicolette Springer has put together?
Let's talk about District 5 then. Regina Hill is a popular candidate. I mean, she's fended off challenges in the past. Dick, what do you see playing out in this race?
Well, Commissioner Hill is a very impressive woman. It's interesting. Keep in mind, before she ran, there were all the newspaper articles. She'd been arrested like 20 times. One was a felon, and she got her rights reinstated. Mm-hmm. She ran. And keep in mind, she ran in, a four-way race, and including Daisy Lynam's son, Juan, ran against her.
Right.
Well, she won that race.
And she kind of leaned into the controversy, too. She said, I'm not going to shy away from it.
She did. She admitted it. It was all public record, and she did not deny anything. But I have met with her on a number of occasions. A lot of it's not for profit stuff, advocacy things, and she is really learning the issues. She is very well liked in her district. Mm-hmm. She's there all the time. She delivers. Remember Congresswoman Corinna Brown? I always deliver. That was kind of her mantra, and it is Regina Hill's mantra too. She's probably raised approaching $100,000. Her kickoff for her reelection was hosted by incumbent Mayor Buddy Dyer, which gives a lot of lift. Mm-hmm. And speaking of that, she's got a lot of activity in her district, too, in Lift Orlando. I didn't mean to segue into a pun, but Lift Orlando, which now has about $110 million of infrastructure projects in her district, either on the drawing board or been completed, the Boys and Girls Club, $7 million from the city of Orlando to redo Lake Lorna Dune. They've built apartments, 250 apartments, with 6,000 people on the waiting list, by the way. So she's worked very good with, I'm going to call it the corporate community, too. Mm-hmm. But she's really there on a day-to-day, door-to-door constituency, and they understand that she understands them. So I would say she's the strongest with the incumbency, with the endorsement, with the money, and the value that she's had in 4 years to really meet her constituent needs as she perceives them.
Chris, what do you know about the challenger, Shaniqua Rose?
Shaniqua, she was active. She was employed at the city and had a pretty high up position, and she started Change for the Community, a nonprofit, also active in the unions. She's no stranger to this district, to this race, and to obviously the city, and she's working hard. I think I tend to land where Dick lands on this. At least I think that's where you land on Commissioner Hill. Is the incumbency usually provides an advantage, and she. I'm not sure anyone can outwork Commissioner Hill. I mean, she is working it hard, both within the corporate and institutional community, and also within the actual residential community there. But it's made the race interesting. And you know, if you asked, would I be surprised if Shaniqua won? No, I think all these races probably have, or at least District 3 and 5 have the potential for a surprise there, given how competitive they've become. Mm-hmm. But when you're the incumbent and you're not sleeping on the job, so to speak, you're not taking it for granted. I think it tends to work in your advantage. And I think another thing that's relevant here is when you think 4 years ago when some of these seats were up and these folks were getting elected or reelected, Orlando was in a much different spot. the economy was doing okay, but not great. The crime, actually, if you look at the numbers, we had a weird blip in our crime where it was a little up, and you saw that, where the challengers were accusing the incumbents of sleeping on crime mm-hmm. and letting that hit. Crime is relatively controlled right now in the city. The economy is doing well. I mean, we're seeing tons of growth. And really, the slings and arrows are all being aimed towards Tallahassee or others over, you know, vaccines or masks or what have you, where the local folks are kind of viewed as, hey, these are our heroes. They're standing up for us. It's not easy to be a local elected official these days. And so I think when you have that and the voters are generally not upset with the status quo, that more than anything probably favors the incumbent. I think 4 years ago there was some rufflings of, you know, our incumbents aren't necessarily taking care of us. And it was more a symptom of crime was up a little bit. The economy wasn't as stable as it is now. But the economy's rocking. Crime is well under control right now. At least it's perceived to be, and certainly statistically it is. And any anger is usually over the COVID issue, not about potholes and other issues.
So there are some other municipal races around Central Florida. In Seminole County, Oviedo's Mayor Megan Sladek faces challengers Kevin Hypes and Abraham Lopez. I want to ask you both, I mean, is development and growth the big story in Oviedo, the big issue here too? Chris, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I think this election is going to come down to a referendum on development and transportation. Oviedo, of all of the Central Florida communities, has seen a lot of growth. When you go outside of Orlando, that's probably been one of the bigger growth areas. And to their credit, they've done a great job of managing that, keeping their commercial districts in certain areas. You still have the chickens running around in the neighborhoods. I mean, you know, it has its folksy.
It's kind of an anachronistic thing, isn't it, when you see, because the downtown has some of that sort of old Florida small town charm still.
Yeah, no, you've got the chickens roaming free in the downtown. You still have the celery farms from Duda. And then yet you have this downtown growing very strongly with the lake park there. You know, Megan Sladek, the mayor of Oviedo, her two opponents, with one in particular, Mr. Hypes, they have made it about transportation. They've said that we have transportation issues and we're overdeveloped and what have you. And that will be the question is if they can get the word out and they think people agree with them, they might have a chance. Now, I'd point out it's a three-way race with an incumbent and it's no runoff. It's plurality. So all the winner only needs to get one more vote than the second place person they're elected. So if I was hedging it, I would tend to say the mayor is in good posture here. She's got name ID. She's well-liked. She's got other politicians in the community that are backing her. But, you know, this is election season, silly season in my world.
Yeah, and the video is obviously exponential growth. It's just quite amazing on the commercial side. And keep in mind, you referred to the Duda family, obviously a long-standing family. They got into commercial development. They're growing celery. I don't know where it is, but anymore. But it's heavily developed. But I think to Chris's point too, where I agree, is that the value of the incumbency again. And when you talk about transportation as a problem, to me, that issue is so organic, it's hard to put your hands around it. So do you mean mass transit? Do you mean more links buses? Do you mean four-lane roads? Well, what I always say when you're doing advocacy, you put a face on it. You know, if it's child abuse, domestic violence, you can put a face on it. Roads, transportation, transit, it's kind of amorphous kind of a deal. But so my point is, I don't think transportation will drive this election.
And of course, in other counties, in Brevard, the Cape Canaveral mayor is up for election. There's also mayoral elections in Mount Dora and Lake County and Lake Helen and Volusia County, along with some other races. In non-presidential election years, even midterm elections, sometimes local municipal races don't get a whole lot of attention. How much attention should we be paying to these municipal elections, though, Chris? How critical are they to folks who maybe don't live in those areas?
Well, we always love to say all politics is local, and it really is. But, I mean, even when you look at this Mount Dora race or the Cape Canaveral mayor's race, you have – we'll dive in a little bit here. In the mayor's race for Mount Dora, you've got an incumbent, longtime incumbent, being taken on by someone who was on the council with the incumbent mayor, then tried to run for the state house and lost. So you got all that local politics. But, you know, the mayor of the city, I mean, we saw it with Surfside, right, and other things. You know, you never know, and you hope it doesn't happen, but you never know when your city is going to be in the spotlight or when there's going to be something that goes on. When I think of Cape Canaveral, I think of our port there. While the port is an independent district, if you've got an uncooperative mayor that's working as a partner, that's a problem, right? And the same thing with Mount Dora. That's such an important part of our community when you think of the historic district there, the amount of events, the proximity of the lake, and how it's both like sort of our natural tourism focus. you know, the wrong mayor can have some negative effects that will have ripple effects across our economy and our way of life. So I always encourage everyone, you know, pay attention, run if you've got the gut in your belly, because
and the money.
Well, and the money. Yeah. I mean, you can't win these races. I mean, Dick mentioned that Commissioner Hill's on Facebook. The irony is, as much as some of the social media companies are picked on, if you're going to win an election, you have to be omnipresent. You have to be out there. And people aren't in a public forum. I'm using air quotes for those listening. They're on Facebook. They're on Instagram. They're on Twitter, pronouncing their views, telling people what they had for salad that day and who they hung out with, and so that they can get the word out of what they're doing and why they're engaged. And so you need the money, but you need the presence. And they're all important, though, and we should give them more attention.
Let's pivot, if we could, for a moment to state politics. The governor has called for a special session to address vaccine mandates and other things. Dick Batchelor, what do you make of this?
It's politics all the time. It really is. I mean, a special session on this issue, you know, you could predict. Here's an incumbent governor running for re-election. There's not a strong Democrat in the race, even though a third one got in the race. He's really running for president in 2024. So everything you see between now and the election will be geared towards that presidential bid. This one issue it's unnecessary for me to believe they need a special session to deal with this issue. And then you're going to have a situation where it might be predictable that he was going to be in a conflict. He's already in a conflict with the incumbent Democratic Mayor Jerry Demings, who's married to Congressman Val Demings, of course, who is running for U.S. Senate. So it all ties into it. It's a good political. The optics are good for him, for his base. Mm-hmm. But it's just like at with the school boards, on the mask issue with the school boards. Teresa Jacobs, big Republican, obviously chair of the school board in Orange County, taking a position on masking. He's threatened to go ahead and deduct their salaries, or maybe remove them from office. It's raw politics is what it is. And then it gets complicated because you've got now his new Surgeon General who doesn't want to wear a mask, but he meets with an incumbent senator who has being treated for cancer. It's an exercise of futility, in my opinion, but it's just raw politics. And I understand why he's doing it. Don't agree with it, but I understand why he's doing it politically, because he's throwing red meat to the base.
Dick Batchelor, Dr. Joseph Lodapo, is his confirmation in jeopardy? Do you think there are some people sort of coming out and saying we're not quite so sure about this candidate for Surgeon General?
I think there are two issues here. One is he qualified? And for a physician during a pandemic to basically say that he doesn't really believe that vaccinations work and maybe masks don't work, to me it's just unbelievable that you would have a physician taking that position in a public forum, number one. And number two, there's a story out today about some emails showing how fast-track his appointment was to the University of Florida faculty. And that's two jobs. So his salary would be maybe $450,000 if you combine the two salaries. So I think there's a little angst going on. The Senate president did say that the way he handled this meeting with the senator with cancer, he thought it was inappropriate. But is that strong enough to go to DeSantis and say, we're not going to approve this guy? You could go through the machinations and but say, oh, by the way, the governor said, I want this appointment confirmed. And that carries, that's the gravitas there.
Well, as a reminder, his predecessor in that job was only confirmed hastily right as the pandemic was beginning, because he had yet to be confirmed. And it was expected and believed that he wasn't going to be confirmed by the Senate. They were just going to not vote on it, which would mean his confirmation would lapse because he needed to have approval by the Senate, and the governor would eventually have to prove someone else. But going into a pandemic, the Senate saw fit that, you know, we ought to probably have someone confirmed that can be in charge of this area, Department of Health. So I wouldn't say it's a foregone conclusion he's going to get confirmed, and this did not help in any way. If you know President Simpson, you're not surprised by that letter. I certainly wasn't. He's a good man, and I could see him immediately hearing that story and saying, we're going to nip that in the bud, you know, and respect his senators from both parties. But, this is on the Surgeon General. If how he approaches it with the Senate will kind of dictate this. I think his positions are well stated, and as a result, I doubt a single Democrat will vote for him to be confirmed. And the Republicans will largely probably be okay with those positions, not all of them, given his position on some of the vaccines. But if he's not handling himself with a level of professionalism with the senators, even just the Democrat members, that could put it in question where they might just not vote on it at all and let it lapse and let the governor. So you're not embarrassing the governor, but you're saying he doesn't get to stay.
Democratic political analyst Dick Batchel, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much.
And Republican political analyst Chris Carmody, good to have you back.
Great to be here. Thanks.